File 1.
The Time Machine by H.G. Wells, told by Stan Winiarski. The time traveler, for so it will be convenient to speak of him, was expounding a recondite matter to us. His gray eyes shone and twinkled, and his usually pale face was flushed and animated. The fire burned brightly, and the soft radiance of the incandescent lights in the lilies of silver caught the bubbles that flashed and passed in our glasses. You must follow me carefully. I shall have to controvert one or two ideas that are almost universally accepted. The geometry, for instance, they taught you at school is founded on a misconception. Is that not rather a large thing to expect us to begin upon? Said Philby, an argumentative person with red hair. I do not mean to ask you to accept anything without reasonable ground for it. You will soon admit as much as I need from you. You know, of course, that a mathematical line, a line of thickness nil, has no real existence. They taught you that? Neither has a mathematical plane. These things are mere abstractions. That is all right, said the psychologist. Nor having any length, breadth, and thickness can a cube have a real existence. There I object, said Philby. Of course, a solid body may exist. All real things, so most people think. But wait a moment. Can an instantaneous cube exist? Don't follow you, said Philby. Can a cube that does not last for any time at all have a real existence? Philby became pensive. Clearly, the time traveler proceeded, any real body must have extension in four directions. It must have length, breadth, thickness, and duration. There are really four dimensions, three which we call the three planes of space, and a fourth, time. There is, however, a tendency to draw an unreal distinction between the former three dimensions and the latter, because it happens that our consciousness moves in one direction along the latter from the beginning to the end of our lives. Now, it is very remarkable that this is so extensively overlooked, continued the time traveler cheerfully. Really, this is what is meant by the fourth dimension. It is only another way of looking at time. There is no difference between time and any of the three dimensions of space, except that our consciousness moves along it. Well, I do not mind telling you that I have been at work upon this geometry of four dimensions for some time. What, said the medical man, staring hard at a coal in the fire. If time is really only a fourth dimension of space, why is it and why has it always been regarded as something different? And why cannot we move in time as we move about in the other dimensions of space? The time traveler smiled. Are you so sure we can move freely in space? Right and left we can go, backward and forward freely enough. I admit we move freely in two dimensions, but how about up and down? Gravitation limits us there. Not exactly, said the medical man. There are balloons, but before the balloons, man had no freedom of vertical movement. Still, they could move a little up and down, said the medical man. And you cannot move at all in time. You cannot get away from the present moment. My dear sir, that is just where you are wrong. That is just where the whole world has gone wrong. We are always getting away from the present moment through our mental existences. For instance, if I am recalling an incident very vividly, I go back to the instant of its occurrence. I become absent-minded, as you say. I jump back for a moment. Of course, we have no means of staying back for any length of time, any more than a savage has of staying 6 feet above the ground. But a civilized man is better off than the savage in this respect. He can go up against gravitation in a balloon, and why should he not hope that ultimately he may be able to stop or accelerate his drift along the time dimension, or even turn about and travel the other way? You can show black is white by argument, said Philby, but you will never convince me. Possibly not, said the time traveler. But now you begin to see the object of my investigations into the geometry of four dimensions. Long ago I had a vague inkling of a machine. To travel through time, exclaimed the very young man, that shall travel indifferently in any direction of space and time as the driver determines. Philby contented himself with laughter. But I have experimental verification, said the time traveler. It would be remarkably convenient for the historian, the psychologist suggested. One might travel back and verify the accepted account of the Battle of Hastings, for instance. One might get one's Greek from the very lips of Homer and Plato, the very young man thought. Let's see your experiment anyhow, said the psychologist, though it's all humbug, you know. The time traveler smiled round at us. Then, still smiling faintly, and with his hands deep in his trousers pockets, he walked slowly out of the room, and we heard his slipper shuffling down the long passage to his laboratory. The psychologist looked at us. I wonder what he's got. Some sleight-of-hand trick or other, said the medical man, and Philby tried to tell us about a conjurer he had seen at Burslem, and before he had finished his preface, the time traveler came back, and Philby's anecdote collapsed. The thing the time traveler held in his hand was a glittering metallic framework, scarcely larger than a small clock, and very delicately made. There was ivory in it, and some transparent crystalline substance. He took one of the small octagonal tables that were scattered about the room and set it in front of the fire with two legs on the hearthrug. On this table he placed the mechanism. The only other object on the table was a small shaded lamp, the bright light of which fell upon the model. There was also perhaps a dozen candles about, two in brass candlesticks upon the mantel, and several in sconces, so that the room was brilliantly illuminated. We were all on the alert. It appears incredible to me that any kind of trick, however subtly conceived and however adroitly done, could have been played upon us under these conditions. This little affair, said the time traveler, resting his elbows upon the table and pressing his hands together above the apparatus, is only a model. It is my plan for a machine to travel through time. You will notice that it looks singularly askew, and that there is an odd twinkling appearance about this bar, as though it was in some way unreal. He pointed to the part with his finger. The medical man got up out of his chair and peered into the thing. "It's beautifully made," he said. "It took 2 years to make," retorted the time traveler. "Now, I want you to clearly understand that this lever, being pressed over, sends the machine gliding into the future, and this other reverses the motion. This saddle represents the seat of a time traveler. Presently, I'm going to press the lever, and off the machine will go. It will vanish, pass into future time, and disappear. Have a good look at the thing. Look at the table, too, and satisfy yourselves there is no trickery. I don't want to waste this model and then be told I'm a quack." There was a minute's pause, perhaps. Then the time traveler put forth his finger towards the lever. "No," he said suddenly. "Lend me your hand." And turning to the psychologist, he took that individual's hand in his own and told him to put out his forefinger, so that it was the psychologist himself who sent forth the model time machine on its interminable voyage. We all saw the lever turn. I am absolutely certain there was no trickery. There was a breath of wind, and the lamp flame jumped. One of the candles on the mantel was blown out, and the little machine suddenly swung round, became indistinct, was seen as a ghost for a second, perhaps, as an eddy of faintly glittering brass and ivory, and it was gone, vanished. Save for the lamp, the table was bare. Everyone was silent for a minute. Then Philby said he was damned. The psychologist recovered from his stupor and suddenly looked under the table. At that, the time traveler laughed cheerfully, then began to fill his pipe. We stared at each other. "Well, look here," said the medical man. "Are you in earnest about this? Do you seriously believe that that machine has traveled into time?" "Certainly," said the time traveler. Then he turned, lighting his pipe, to look at the psychologist's face. "What is more, I have a big machine nearly finished in there," he indicated the laboratory, "and when that is put together, I mean to have a journey on my own account. Would you like to see it?" And therewith, taking the lamp in his hand, he led the way down the long, drafty corridor to his laboratory. I remember vividly the flickering light, his queer, broad head in silhouette, the dance of the shadows, how we all followed him, puzzled but incredulous, and how there in the laboratory we beheld a larger version of the little mechanism which we had seen vanish before our eyes. Parts were of nickel, parts of ivory, parts had certainly been filed or sawn out of rock crystal. The thing was generally complete, but the twisted crystalline bars lay unfinished upon the bench beside some sheets of drawings, and I took one up for a better look at it. Quartz, it seemed to be. "Look here," said the medical man, "are you perfectly serious, or is this a trick like that ghost you showed us last Christmas?" "Upon that machine," said the time traveler, holding the lamp aloft, "I intend to explore time. Is that plain? I was never more serious in my life." None of us knew quite how to take it. I caught Philby's eye over the shoulder of the medical man, and he winked at me solemnly.